I am delighted that we were able to put this panel together for Saber 49. In particular, I owe a lot of gratitude to Gene Ardell, a longtime Saber member who was really the driving force behind by bringing all these women together. And Gene's going to moderate the panel. She's also the author of Breaking Into Baseball, Women and the National Pastime. She's also and the co-author with Isla Borders of Making My Pitch, A Woman's Baseball Odyssey. Isla's down here on the panel. She co-edited with Annie McHugh the 2011 Saber Convention Journal, Endless Seasons, Baseball in Southern California, and was the longtime co-chair of the 9 Spring Training Conference in Tempe, Arizona. Gene Ardell.
Thank you so much. I'm going to introduce our panel, and I'm so happy each of you are here. You each bring a special voice and point of view to the subject at hand, so welcome. First off, Perry Barber, is our, and she spent 39 years, I almost said 79, umpiring from Little League through to Major League spring training games, including assembling the first 4 women umpiring crew for a Major League spring training game. She's also umpired internationally in Taiwan and Hong Kong and speaks to diverse audiences from around the world about the rewards of umpiring. She's a board member of the International Women's Baseball Center, and I hope we'll hear more about that today. So, welcome, Perry. Isla Borders grew up a Little League prodigy in La Mirada before earning a baseball scholarship to Southern California College, now Vanguard University in Costa Mesa. She pitched 4 years of men's varsity baseball, and after signing with the St. Paul Saints in 1997, she pitched more than 100 innings of men's professional baseball, mostly in the independent Northern League, becoming the first woman since the Negro Leagues era to win a professional game. She now works as a firefighter in the Portland, Oregon area. She coaches in MLB's Breakthrough Series. Thank you, Tyrone, for that. And works with the MLB executive known as Billy Bean, who's the head of the Diversity and Inclusion Department at MLB in New York, helping to advocate throughout baseball. Jewel Greenberg is the producer of Girls of Summer, Big Diamond Dreams, a documentary film about the girls and women who play baseball throughout the world. She focused the film on members of the U.S. Women's National Baseball Team at the Women's National Baseball World Cup in South Korea. She's a filmmaker, actor, and storyteller who was born in Saudi Arabia and is now based in L.A. Justine Siegel is the founder of Baseball for All, a nonprofit organization that empowers women to play, coach, and lead in baseball. She earned her doctorate in sport and exercise psychology from Springfield College, where she served as an assistant coach for the men's baseball team from 2008 to 2010. In 2011, she became the first woman to throw batting practice to major league teams, and in 2015, she was hired by the Oakland A's as a coach in the Arizona Instructional League. Janet Marie Smith is Senior Vice President of Planning and Development for the Los Angeles Dodgers, where since 2012 she has overseen the renovations to Dodger Stadium. She's best known in baseball for her work on Oriole Park in Camden Yards, which set the standard for a new wave of ballparks after its opening in 1992, but she's done so much more. She worked with the Boston Red Sox to oversee the renovations of Fenway Park from 2002 to 2009, and for the Atlanta Braves to oversee the conversion of the 1996 Olympic Stadium to Turner Field. Kelsey Whitmore. She has been playing baseball since she was 6 years old. Along the way, she was part of an all-girls travel baseball team called the Dream Team, and a participant in Baseball for All with Justine Siegel. Since the age of 16, she's played on the women's USA national baseball team. From 2006 to 18, she played outfield and pitched for the Sonoma Stompers, a professional club in the Independent Pacific Association. She currently attends Cal State Fullerton, on a softball scholarship and is majoring in kinesiology. Welcome, panel, and I'd like to add Perry was the inaugural recipient, last year of Sabre's Dorothy Seymour Mills Lifetime Achievement Award. Isla Borders and Janet Marie Smith are current nominees for this year's honor. I'd also like you to note that directly after this session is the Women in Baseball Committee meeting, and you're all welcome to attend. Also, we're going to leave time for Q&A at the end of our talks, and there are going to be note cards in the back that you can go and retrieve, write your questions. They'll bring them up to me, and we'll sort them out and present them to the panelists. So with no further ado, I'd like to say that in 1993, I attended my first Sabre convention right here in San Diego. There were two female presenters, Barbara Gregorich and me. And I was blown away to discover the depth and breadth of baseball research that was being done by Sabre members. And it made me a believer in the organization. And when I started thinking back, I thought, well, where were you all in 1993? Where were you in your baseball odyssey? And Kelsey, you weren't even born yet, so tell us how you encountered baseball.
I'm currently 20 years old, so I wasn't born until 1998. So growing up playing baseball, I grew up since I was 6 years old, and baseball was it was always fun for me. You know, I came from a family where my dad really kind of got me involved with it, and I just stuck with it ever since. And so at the youth level, I was never really looked at as any differently. I felt just like one of the guys. And so growing up, obviously that got a little bit different when the boys started to realize who they were playing against and playing with, and it was someone with long hair. And so they realized, oh, that's different. And when something gets different, that can be uncomfortable. So, you know, growing up, it was a lot of fun playing ball, but there were some negatives at the same time, but as well as positives. But
thanks.
That's a great time.
Perry, why don't we start with you and go down the line here. What were you doing in 1993?
I was working high school doubleheaders, NCAA baseball up around the Northeast, about to get married. Ooh. And I told my husband I want to be on dry land on the weekends. He wanted to be on his boat. And I'm here now, and he's back in Connecticut. So I was about 12 years into my umpiring career. And at that point, I was pretty resigned or accepting of the fact that I was never going to be a major league umpire. I had gone to umpire school in 1982, 83, 84, 85, trying to break that, I call it the stained glass ceiling of baseball.
All right.
And I realized it was never going to happen for me, but that was no reason why I couldn't help make it happen for somebody else. So that has been my goal and my mission since
Great.
Then.
Janet Marie, it was a year after Camden Yards opened.
It was.
Camden
Yards opened in 1992, and I was still explaining to people why we had wanted to build a ballpark that had references of old-fashioned parks like Ebbets and Fenway rather than modern things like the Toronto Sky Dome. And we were hosting the All-Star Game that year. It's the last time that Baltimore has hosted the All-Star Game. And I was delighted to hear that the Sabre Convention is going to Baltimore next summer, so Camden Yards will be in your spotlight again. I think when I first started working in baseball, I didn't really expect it to be a career trajectory for me. I'm always interested in cities, and my real interest in working for the Orioles was how one can use baseball as a civic space, as a way of regenerating cities, as a way of bringing people together. And I really expected to bring what I knew from architecture and urban planning to that particular project and then move on to something else. But it stuck with me, and I couldn't be more delighted. So I appreciate the chance to join you. I feel like an imposter on this panel because the other women up here are the real thing, right? And I try to just orchestrate a place for the rest of us to enjoy what they do. So thank you for having me, Jean.
Iowa.
Well, I'm sitting next to a hero of mine, so thank you. This is great. 1993, I was a senior in high school. I was just all about playing baseball. I was also playing basketball and golfing at the same time. My coach, Charlie Phillips, who I actually signed my letter of intent to go to college my junior year. It's kind of like that's what they do is you need to get ready your junior year and your senior year. You're just going out there and trying to get every record that you possibly can, and that was my goal. And staying physically fit by doing basketball, doing baseball. I was very lucky. I was MVP my junior and my senior year and getting ready to go to Southern California College, which is Vanguard right now, and start my adventure with college baseball.
Thank you. Justine.
Well, I just learned that Kelsey was born the same year as my daughter. In 93, I was playing high school baseball as a senior. The same school that my freshman year wouldn't allow me to try out. And I ended up pitching against them at Bucky Dent's baseball school. And once I pitched against them, and then I said, can I play and try out? They were like, sure. So that's what I was doing my senior year. I think I was the first girl in the state of Ohio to play baseball. Thinking about where I might be able to play in college.
Very good. Jewel.
1993. So I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and I was still there in junior high in 1993, and we didn't have baseball, as far as I knew. So my experience with baseball to that point, as an American kid growing up outside of the U.S., I was very interested in what I thought of as American stuff. And I got to go to a baseball game in New York City with my uncle and my cousins when I was probably 9, and we got rained out. We didn't really see much baseball. We had hot dogs, but for me, it was this experience of like, oh, this is an American thing that I just did. And that was really exciting. And to be there with family that I love with this huge stadium full of people, because we also didn't have, you know, gatherings like that when I was growing up, was a really incredible experience for me from more of a family aspect than really an athletic aspect.
Okay, thank you. Well, to start, it occurs to me that baseball is all about, and always has been, about story. What is it about this game that makes it worthy of its rich history of literature, film, national conversation, cultural gatherings, and conferences like this? I'm struck by the recent opening of the play Tony Stone in New York City. Has anybody been reading about it? Yeah. There's always a new story. Aviva Kempner's Mo Berg documentary, which we're going to see this evening, another one. So how about you? What resonated with you as far as baseball's story?
Go ahead. Go for it. All right. I think baseball's always been America's pastime. Sport. It's always been a love for everyone, whether you have played or whether you have just been watching the game. But as a player, I've noticed that baseball has also created friendships. It's created friendships. It's created like love for the game. It's created when she says literature. To me, I just think of the way you speak the game, the way you talk about it, the way you can connect and like. Baseball's, for me, all my only friends are people I've played baseball with, and so it's a way for me to get away from the real world and kind of focus in on a new world. So I think baseball has really opened a lot of doors for people and is very a big cultural gathering as well.
Yeah, baseball literature is so rich, and I remember when I was starting my first book wanting to be like Roger Angel, who I admired so much. And I wondered what your favorite authors are, male or female, in baseball literature.
Larry Gerlach, right there. His book changed my life. My mother saw me reading his book, The Men in Blue, Conversations with Umpires, and thought that that meant I wanted to be an umpire, when in fact she'd seen me reading books about serial killers and never brought that up. So I don't know. She connected some dots that to this day I don't think I ever would have, and its genesis was with you, Larry. So thank you for being here on this planet as well as in this room.
Okay. Anybody else want to chime in?
And Eugene, too.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, there are so many great authors in this room, in this whole place. There are so many great authors. And that's how my love affair with baseball started. I fell in love with it by reading about it in books because I wanted to beat a friend of mine at baseball trivia. Yeah. That was my sole impetus, truly. So the stories, baseball stories, are my reason for being alive now. It's what drives me.
I really wanted to comment on the question before you got to the authors about what it is about baseball, because having worked on baseball parks, I think the fact that they are so special is really noteworthy. I mean, there's no other sport where we refer to the home of the sport as a cathedral. You know, what the audacity of that. Or that we think of it as such a reference point. And I've always been struck with how many stories begin with when I was at fill in the blank, Fenway, Crosley Field, Petco Park, and how we resonate with baseball parks as more than just the home of a sport. And I, of course, the fact that that each is different, that the outfield is different, that its configuration is shaped by the city it's in, makes it all so very special. But I think makes it unique in a way that it really does become very civic in its grounding and something that means. That is about the poetry and draws it to literature. I also think, having worked on a number of renovations of sort of classic parks like Fenway and Dodger Stadium, you never become an expert in it, right? The only real experts are those fans who go dozens and dozens of games every year over decades, and they're going to tell you. So you'd better be a good listener, because they're going to tell you what it is that they expect out of their park. And everything from the way the national anthem is sung, to the food that's served, to the way the seventh inning stretch is handled, is different from city to city. And I think that's part of what makes it so special and such an American thing.
Yeah, thank you. Eiler, I remember you talking about reading on Jackie Robinson's life and how that affected you. Do you want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, there were certain things that I was going through, and I just didn't know how to handle them. You know, I was very young at the time, and I wanted to do a good job. I wanted to represent. You know, the first thing I was told was, Isla, if you go out there and if you fail, you're going to be setting all women back. And as a 20-year-old, hearing that multiple times, and I'm just like, God, I just want to go play baseball. But now that load started to sink in, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm okay with failing myself. But if I fail all women and then I push them back, God, where do I find Jackie Robinson's book? You know, what the heck? And I did. I read that book. I was in the, Neil Carlin gave that to me. And I was in the, the little area that's going from the locker room and even in the umpire's room. And I would just read that, and I'm like, what did he do? You know, when you get a death threat, what do? When you go through this, what do? And it was kind of like my Bible, his autobiography, and see how he did that. And then I just tried to emulate what Jackie did, and that helped me out tremendously.
You know, Neil Carlin, by the way, is the author of Slouching Towards Fargo, the wonderful account of a couple of years he spent running around the Northern League, and good book. If we talk about story and narrative, we also need to talk about voice. And I'm interested in hearing from you all about, well, we all know the different female announcers now, Jessica Mendoza, et cetera. I read recently from the New Boston Herald that there are 6 minor league female announcers, out of 256 teams. So we have a few female voices. We also have filmmakers like Jewel and Aviva. So what voice have you contributed to the game, and how have you contributed your voice to the game?
This is a little bit of a connection between the previous question and this one, but in developing a documentary film, we have the opportunity, I think in many ways, like you do as researchers and authors and teachers, to tell a story that's perhaps has been overlooked by telling the stories of people in it. And helping to give them a voice. So in what we've tried to do, we've had a name change to our film since I sent you the bio, so it's actually Hardball, The Girls of Summer now. That's going to stick. This is the final one. We've been able to talk to women in baseball who have been playing, you know, since the 1950s and had an interest in baseball since then, all the way to kids just coming up now that are 8 years old. And the ability to hear their stories and their perspectives and to put that on film and hopefully get that in front of a lot of other people just gives us this breadth of storytelling from individuals in the game of all different levels that I think is so important. And it's really their voices of experience, new and old and everything in the middle, that to me is really exciting right now in baseball.
I think it's funny you asked that question because Jewel, she did a documentary on, I was a part of her documentary, so I was able to share my voice through her, and it's funny with the people you come to know how you can spread your story. And I feel, for me, I don't really want my story to be out just because I want people to just be out there and be loud about it. It's more for me to inspire younger girls to know that they have somebody they can look up to, and to look up to somebody that they're like, okay, she's done it, I know I can do it. Growing up, there wasn't many female baseball players that played that I knew of that I could really look up to and be like, I want to be like her. There wasn't many. So I kind of want to be that for all those younger girls that can have someone to look up to as well. So I think having a voice and what I've been able to say, and whether it's interviews, whether it's people who have written articles about me, I hope that it has inspired younger girls, and not just younger girls, but also even older women to be passionate about what they love and to keep going with their dreams.
Can I put you on the spot for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So when we were making the film, we got to talk to Kelsey and her family about what it was like when she was growing up playing baseball. And then we also got to talk to her coach at Cal State Fullerton. And we got to see her play with the Stompers. We got to see her with the World Cup team in 2016. So we've had an opportunity to create a story that really has a through line of the development of an athlete and can show girls coming up that there are opportunities to play, you know, after you're 9, after you're 12, after you're 15. And I think that is a story, at least to my knowledge, that we don't have much access to yet. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
For me, when I was 13, when I was first told I should quit baseball because I was a girl. And I would say most of my baseball playing times was incredibly painful, always being the only girl, always having to ask if I can try out, ask if I can play, ask just to be on the bench. And same with coaching, being the first woman to coach pro men's baseball, it's just a constant asking for permission to be in a game that I love. I used to sleep with my bat next to my bed in case sometimes I wanted to just swing at night. You know, you wake up and want to be a little better. So my voice was, when my daughter was born, I knew I wanted to change the future. I wanted, if girls wanted to play baseball, if my daughter wanted to play baseball, I wanted her to have it without the pain and discrimination I faced. And for me, that's why I started Baseball for All, so that girls no longer feel alone, and they know that baseball is the greatest game and it's available to them. So when I think about voice, I wouldn't say that my voice has been heard, but when I see the hundreds of girls playing and smiling and the acceptance that they have in that moment, and they now know that they can be Isla Borders and Kelsey Whitmore, that to me is like the definition of voice, the transition from being so silenced so many years.
I just had a quick mention. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say too, but this idea as well of like having a collective voice, I think is really important, because a lot of the girls that we spoke to and a lot of the women that we spoke to felt very alone in their baseball pursuits or their baseball careers, depending on where they were. And I know for my stepdaughter, coming to Baseball for All was a huge boon to her self-confidence and her feeling that she wasn't alone in this path to pursue baseball. It was massive for her, and it was so good to see a group of girls being able to get together and play.
Good points. Perry, we'd like to hear from you about umpiring on the field. You've been doing this since the 1980s. What's changed? What hasn't? How has it involved you in your life? And
a lot has changed, and quite thankfully so, because when I started, I too was all alone. I did not know anybody except my identical twin sister, who I made go to umpire school with me my first year so I wouldn't be the only one. She was my support system, and I thank Goddess every day for her, because the life of an umpire, especially a young umpire starting out, well, I wasn't young, but I was starting out. I started umpiring when I was 26, which is relatively late. But having a support system is really important, because umpires obviously have to withstand a certain degree of abuse and contempt and ill treatment. But I want to abolish that image. That is a very fleeting part of what we do out there. Most of it is very challenging and rewarding and mentally stimulating. But the big difference between when I started and now is that there is movement. When I first started, there was active resistance, and then 10, 15 years on, that resistance had dissipated, but it hadn't turned into proactivity. It had settled into a kind of inertia, where the people that were in positions to change things and make things better, make conditions better for women, players and umpires, weren't doing anything. They were just sort of sitting around twiddling their thumbs saying, well, we're not standing in the way now. You know, all of a sudden, some women are going to show up all magically ready to go, boom, boom, and that's how it's going to happen. Now they're starting to realize, no, there has to be an infrastructure of support and promotion and training and recruitment and all of that. And there's been that for boys and men for, you know, time immemorial. Since boys are in utero, there's a pathway to the major leagues or to college ball or, you know, to even to adult men's ball, wherever they want to go. But for women, there has not been that. And we are now in the infancy of seeing those infrastructures being built and set up so that our daughters and granddaughters won't have to struggle and feel alone or adrift, like, what do I do now? Where do I go? Who do I turn to for advice and guidance? All of that is now being put into place. And that, to me, is the big difference, that there is now a forward movement without the impediments that there were before. And there are people actually sitting up and realizing that women's participation is not a threat. It's an asset. It is not a zero-sum game. We're not going to force men off the field and take over like a horde of screaming estrogen-crazed banshees. It's not going to happen. It's just the women that want to play. And most of us, truthfully, we don't want to play with the guys. We like playing with ourselves, amongst ourselves. It's just much more fun that way. There's a vibe. And that's all happening now. And it's about damn time. So.
Perry, could you add the numbers of women that are going through umpiring school and starting to enter the system versus when you first started?
Sure. When I started in 1981, there was one woman umpire in pro ball. Until exactly 5 years ago, at that time, there were zero women in pro ball. So we had actually gone backwards. Now there are two women in pro ball at the same time, and both of them are following a pretty familiar trajectory. In 5 or 6 years, it's entirely possible that we could see both or at least one of them as serving as vacation umpires going up and down between AAA and the major leagues. Right. As far as other arenas of baseball, little league, youth ball, high school, and college, they have generally been much more rapid about getting infrastructures in place to recruit and draw women to positions such as umpires, players, announcers. So amateur baseball in this country has been, I think, a little more progressive right. about it. But thankfully, major and minor league baseball are catching up because they realize right. that women are not just a market as consumers, but as active participants. And that opens up a whole universe of magic for all of us.
Thank you. We have three women who have played and or coached baseball since the early, either before the, during the 80s or currently. They kind of span that 30 years. And we start with Isla, who was the first to be playing back in the 80s, Little League. And tell us what you saw during your playing days.
Yeah, during my, there's nobody on the Little League field. There's nobody playing high school baseball. It's kind of like our stories, like with Justine. You're like the only one. They did horrible things to kind of stop you from playing. Whereas now, I actually have colleges calling me saying, hey, did you see anybody at the Breakthrough Series? Did you see anybody at Grit? Do you see anybody that wants to go play college baseball that you think's good enough? I'm floored. You know, when I did it, I put 20 applications out. I was calling everybody. I was doing everything. Everybody said no but three. And then one said, hey, come over here. We're going to give you a full ride. So now the contact is coming to me, and they're saying, who can we take? We want to take somebody. I didn't have the women's national team. It wasn't there. Breakthrough Series, Grit. Justine probably has better numbers. I don't know. I know hers is just flown off the charts, doubled, tripled with women participants. She could probably tell you the numbers with that. But you could see there's a vibe changing, and you could see the women's national team, they're going and coaching these Breakthrough Series, Grit, and that. And it's just an exciting time. MLB's on board, USA's on board, everybody's on board. They're looking. The only thing, and I say this as a firefighter in a male-dominated, field now, is, okay, we've got women that are coaching the Trailblazers series and the Grit and that, which is fantastic. And we usually have three, like, professional players that come over, men, that go there too. But what I'm hoping to do is to get some women to go and coach the men in their Breakthrough Grit and that. I am the captain at my fire department. I have men that follow me, and they are fantastic. They have no problem with it. So I think it's really important at a young age that we expose some men to women coaches too. So yeah, we've got them in this series, but I think it would be really good to do that.
Isla, before we move on to Justine, could you please explain a little bit about the Breakthrough Series and the, what was the other one you were talking
Grit.
About?
I don't know the numbers, Justine, if you can help me out here. I think the Breakthrough Series we went through, is it two or three now?
No, just what it is. Just identify.
The age group. You have different age groups that are coming in, and you're exposing them to amazing coaches. I did not have that. I didn't have the funds to go pay to get a professional coach. Now you're getting the women's national team that's helping these girls. They're giving them something to strive and look to. And then you get them, and MLB's behind it, and USA's behind it. Then you have Grit, which is taking them at a different age group. And then I just got back from coaching at the Breakthrough Series in Florida, and what's really cool is to see these girls come in, the trailblazing one. And like I said, Justine probably has seen this multiple times, even with Kelsey, who went through the system, is seeing that growth. When you invest in somebody and you give them good coaching, it's amazing what they can do. And so we're just trying to get that to be bigger and bigger. But my thing now is I believe we need to infiltrate into the men's side so that they can understand women can be coaches at a very young age, and that just grows. The same thing with the fire department. You know, you're putting women in position, they're starting to listen, and there's no problem with the female being a coach or a female being a captain.
For anyone who doesn't know, the Trailblazer series, the Grit, and then Breakthrough series are all programs from MLB Baseball that are girl-specific. So those are specifically for girls in baseball. And Isla, you might know better than I do. I know USA Baseball, which manages the women's national team, is a sort of a co-sponsor of the Trailblazer series. Are they also for Grit and Breakthrough?
Yes. They're different people. Oh, you mean different coaches?
No, I mean, is USA Baseball also affiliated with Grit and Breakthrough series?
All through, yes.
Well,
yes.
So there's now developing a through line for girl baseball players from Little League and then getting more specific coaching into the Trailblazer series and then moving up into those other two series, finally to development camp and tryouts for the women's national team.
Great.
So this is all just developed in the last 2-3 years.
Oh, but I talked to Major League for 10 years.
You're up.
Say again.
I've been talking to Major League Baseball for 10 years.
Yes.
So it's actually extremely exciting to have Major League Baseball behind girls baseball at the moment in these three programs. It's just phenomenal, and it means so much to these girls. I was 16 when I decided I wanted to be a baseball coach. So I told my coach, and he laughed at me. And he said, no man will listen to a woman on a baseball field. I just got back from coaching in Japan a couple weeks ago, the professional level. Those guys were asking me questions on the very first day I showed up. I'm absolutely with Isla. All these guys care about is, can you make them a better player? And do you care about them as a person? Those two things, and if you can, they're all for it. For me, coaching, I really like to coach girls because the role model, but interestingly enough, the more I've done to grow girls baseball, the less opportunities to coach girls baseball I've had. So I've mostly coached with men in different independent leagues. I was a coach with Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic qualifier in Brooklyn and with the A's. And Isla was mentioning Jackie Robinson as her map. I was, my very first year in 2009 when I did independent ball, which was the first time I coached pro baseball and no other woman had done it. I had just been done being told how useless I was by one of the coaches. And he was going on and on with a bunch of swear words on how much he didn't want me on his baseball field. And he ended with, you're a really nice doll and all, but I can go to a bar and get a doll. So I had to think, what am I going to do? Because quitting was never something I considered. And I decided that, like Jackie Robinson, he couldn't fight back, he could only play well. And that you couldn't control how other people would treat you. So I decided that I would be kind when others were mean. And that philosophy has taken me pretty far, even so far that that gentleman who couldn't stand to have me on his field actually recommended me for a pro job 7 years later.
Great.
So it's definitely, it's been a great path. I wish I could coach more girls. I'll have to stick with these stinky men. But it's phenomenal to be able to help people reach their goals and their dreams.
Great. Thank you. Kelsey, what's been your experience as the latest ball player?
My youth playing baseball, very similar to what Isla was saying, but when I was really young, there wasn't much negativity. I felt very similar with the guys, and I felt like I fit in. When I hit high school is when it all kind of changed. I did feel kind of separated in a way. It was hard to kind of get along with them and kind of relate to them in a way. But mostly there was a time when one of my teammates I overheard saying that we're going to the gym, and he was like, why is Kelsey going to the gym? She's never going to get stronger. She won't be able to run as fast as us. Like, what's the point of her going to the gym? And my best friend on the team came up to me and told me that. He's like, don't worry about it. I got him. And I appreciated that. But at the same time, it was the first time I ever had something negative hit back at me, and for a second I was a little shy about it. I was kind of like, all right, I don't know what to do about it. But at the same time, it really hit me, and I was like, okay, like, this is, it's gonna happen more. I need to learn how to deal with it. And so instead of speaking with my words, I learned to speak with my glove and with my bat, with the way I played. Try not to be, you know, cocky or speak out about anything like that. Once I started playing with the Sonoma Stompers, it was an amazing time. The first time I went on there, I did get looks. I did get men looking at me for a second, like, why is she here? And you know that look. Every girl knows that look where it's like, all right, I don't think he likes me being here or being a part of this. And so I just had to deal with it. I knew it's what I loved. And I knew it's what I wanted, so I had to take a chance. And so I did. And I think one of the biggest things that kind of set me back for a little bit was there were tweets, like social media. And social media became a big part of what kind of tore me apart, because after games, after competitions, there were tweets that were being sent out that I would see, and it was very negative stuff towards me, and it was hard to accept. It really was. And so at the time, I think, thankfully, I had another girl on the team. Her name was Stacy Piagno. And so if I did not have her, I don't know how I would have handled it. And so having another female baseball player with me who was able to help me out, and she pulled me up, looked me straight in the eyes, and she said, you can't pay attention to that. You're going to have so many people that are going to tell you what you should and what you shouldn't do, and you can't listen to them. And if you do, you're doing exactly what they want. And so ever since then, I just kind of, I did my own thing, try to work hard, and, you know, sooner or later it'll pay off. So.
And for me, one of the really cool things was that Kelsey actually texted me the morning of her first game.
Yeah.
To have her think of me in that moment, you know, like asking me for advice. She doesn't know what that meant to me. But it was really incredible. And I have to tell you, when I was in Japan, they were talking about you. One of the teammates I had, he played with you. He knew you. And they were like, oh, yeah, Kelsey, she's awesome. She's amazing. So you went international.
Great. Great.
Before we open up for questions, I'd like to ask each of the panelists to make a brief statement. We're talking 1 minute, not two. Sorry, we went long. About what they want to see in the future for the game, for their gender.
Shall we start down at the end?
Yep.
What I would like to see is that every person in this room can make a difference by talking about it. I mean, I'm sitting here wondering how many of you actually, for the first time today, realize that girls playing baseball is a thing, that there is such a thing as a women's national team, because a lot of people really don't know. They don't know. They don't understand that our dreams are their dreams. They're just like the boys. It's to play, to coach, to umpire, to dream, to live, to breathe, to eat, to sleep baseball. And it's our dream. It's all of our dreams. So you can talk about it. You can walk up to a young girl or an older woman, like my mother did to me, out of the blue. And I thought she was out of her mind. She said to me, you should be an umpire. Who says that to a woman? I mean, who said it to a woman in 1981? You should start saying it. You can recognize all of the women and the girls in your lives and tell them that they have something really special inside of them that makes them really good candidates for being umpires. We have social media now. And I know, Kelsey, it can be a weapon that can be turned against you to hurt. But as far as getting the message out, it's a very invaluable tool. A.J. Richards, sitting here in the first row, has a Facebook page called Women Belong in Baseball. A lot of us are on it all the time. It's a community, and it will continue to grow if we work together. And everybody in this room is an ally. We love men. We are not against you. Promise. We're not going to shut you out or stop having sex with you. I promise. Okay?
Thank you, Perry.
On that note.
But you can all do your part just as I'm doing mine and just as every woman on this panel is doing her part to make baseball a much more expansive and inclusive community.
Thank you. Janet Marie.
Well, I guess I should answer from the business side since I don't have any experience on the field, but I am always struck at how few women there are who've chosen careers in baseball. And I'm also struck at how few women there are in other professions like architecture and planning. So I don't know. I guess maybe I feel not unlike some of my colleagues here that you don't carry the I'm a woman and so I should. You just do the best you can in that forum. I'm often asked if the projects that I've worked on have been successful because I brought a point of view from a woman's perspective that's changed or altered the way the physical planning might be done. And I think the question is almost amusing because I don't even pretend to represent anything other than a filter for a broad base of fans. And I think women as fans want the same thing as men as fans want, which is the ability to watch the game in a clean, safe, fun, enthusiastic, memorable environment, you know. So I don't think that many of the things we want are gender specific. And what I've really enjoyed about some of the conversations that I've been a part of, like this forum, is getting to know people like Perry, because there's a skill set that as an athlete, the woman down here to my left had that is just amazing to me. But then there's skills that, you know, that trainers bring, that umpires bring, that broadcasters bring that aren't at all gender specific and nor dependent upon your athletic ability. And I think schools and colleges need to do a better job, as do women in those professions, of just doing what they do so that there is more of a touch point for that. Perry prompted me to think of something before we start in our side conversation. I'll try to make it brief. Some 20 years or so ago, there was this sort of feeling in sports that just as we needed to look more carefully at evening out the distribution of restrooms for fans, that we needed to look at support facilities in clubhouses to give women women umpires, women trainers, women clubbies, no one said women players, but this other support staff. And baseball, of course, doesn't have set rules on what you do with your facility, but there was this sort of feeling, and I've been struck at how we've tried in our facilities to accommodate that and how often it gets co-opted by the mascot because there's not a woman there to use that facility. And I told Perry a story of working on the Dodgers Dominican facility a few years ago. We were the first club to have a Dominican facility, and so when it needed to be renovated 30 years in, we went in and we set up. We made certain that there were facilities for women in the training room, in the coaches' clubhouse, et cetera. And we moved everyone in before we really finished, so the signage wasn't up. And we had a woman who was our head trainer. And so when I saw her there on one of my first trip after they moved in, she said to me, "I can't believe that there aren't facilities for women." I said, "Well, there are." And she said, "They're not. Like, I'm dressing with the men in here." And she said, "I love the camaraderie after we're all dressed, but like, shower." And it was kind of funny because we had designed it, but because no one had been in that room, they thought it was a storage closet. And so it's like opening up nirvana for her that they're, oh, no, we do have this. Anyway, it's just a little sidebar, but it is a reminder that our facilities have to be welcoming at all levels, too.
Okay. Isla.
I would love to invest in our women's national team a little bit more. There's a lot of stuff, but I have some ideas that I would love to see, and I'm going to kind of compare it to the WNBA. You know, I was around when I first started to see the WNBA play, and it was really, really, you know, tough to kind of start out. And then you'd see the women go over to Europe, and then they'd come back and they'd play, and then you start to see, I don't know if you've seen a game now, they're amazing. But it took that time to develop. Now, we've got breakthrough, we've got grit, we've got these things, which is phenomenal. But in my mind, if we want to get women's professional baseball, and it's only in the United States, it's not going to be sustainable. And why I think it's not going to be sustainable is because we have to constantly, when I was playing, I was constantly playing. I had a little break here and there, but I was able to develop high school, college, pro. I mean, that was really important. So I think if we could invest in the women's national team, and because Kelsey will tell you, they get like 2 or 3 weeks to gel and that's it. They have the most talented team in the world. And why are they not doing it? They need to be able to gel together as a team, go play women's professional baseball here, and then go to Australia. Go to Australia in the winter. Now you're in November, December, January. Some women from the national team actually have done that. Give them a job, let them play, come back. Play in the United States, go. So I think to get women's professional baseball, it's going to have to be an international effort. I think we're going to have to cross lines, and I think it's going to have to be with Australia because their winter program absolutely is perfect to fit with the United States. And I think we need to invest in our women's national team so that other girls can see that, like Kelsey was saying, take care of them, invest in them, and train them.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to stop here and hope that the rest three of you can address what you hope for the future during the Q&A. Because we're a little short on time. Scott, do you have the cards? Or somebody? Leslie? Anybody? Who's Erica? There you
go,
Erica.
15 seconds to run up here. So.
We won't take it off the time. Yeah. Okay, this is for Perry Barber. Recently, Kenley Jansen committed an international balk after a game opposing manager suggested in the future he might decline at the extra base. Can a team refuse to take one or more bases granted? Are there plays where they can refuse? Emma.
I'm sorry, were you asking about a balk?
The intentional balk. Remember Kenley Jansen?
I don't. No, I'm sorry. I'm
okay.
clueless about that. On a balk, the ball is not immediately dead in pro baseball. If the batter hits the ball, you allow whatever happens to happen, and then if everybody, including the batter, advances one base safely, the balk is essentially ignored because you don't want to inflict a penalty on the offense for a defensive mistake. There is no declining a base in a balk. The only time a manager can decline part of a penalty is when a catcher interferes with the batter, catcher's interference.
Okay.
That's the only time a manager can decline a base.
The manager has said that in the future he would like to decline.
Well, then he'll have to go through the rules committee.
Thank you. This is from a woman baseball journalist who's gotten a fair amount of hate and on social media. And she feels as if she's holding on to all this anger due to some of these jealous people who are fear that she knows more than they do. Yes, Justine.
Well, the reason why I decided to be kind when others were mean was because I needed to keep my own peace within myself. Because if you take the hate, if you take the anger, you can't move forward into what pathway you want to go. So for me, my suggestion, as hard as it is just to say screw them and remember where you're trying to go. And don't let others dictate where they think you should be. And for me, we baked the team brownies, my daughter and I. We did a physical act of kindness. To try to keep that peace within so that I wouldn't be overcome with the anger. So I just remember where you want to be and don't let other people put you in a box.
Kelsey, how about you? What would you say?
I would say the same exact thing. I feel that you can't listen to the negative things that people want to say, and the more you feed into it, the more they're happy about it. Sometimes that's what they want, is to see you fail, to see you struggle. If they're jealous of you, they don't want the best for you, if that's what their intentions are. So I definitely think that you need to focus on what you want, because it really is your life. It's your choice, and you need to focus on your own path, just like Justine said, and try your hardest to ignore it. Surround yourself with good people who support you, because I'll get you through those hard times.
I'll be your friend.
Also, there's an idea in marketing and also with film audiences, or really any sales audience, I guess, that you can divide your audience into thirds. And one third is already a huge fan of what you do. One third is kind of interested and are probably going to jump on the bandwagon with a little bit of TLC from you. And the other third is never going to be interested, doesn't want to hear about it. So don't put your energy into that third that already isn't interested. Right? Put your energy into the two-thirds that are already gung-ho for what you do and are probably going to get on board, and you're going to feel better, and they're going to feel awesome and continue to enjoy what you're doing. And that is much happier for everyone involved, if you can. It's hard to ignore, but, yeah. You know.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, miraculously, we have 3 minutes left and 3 people who haven't been heard from about what they hope for the future. So, Justine, 1 minute.
I'll be quick. 1 minute. It's an honor to make history, but to me it's much more important to build a better future. I started Baseball for All to get girls playing baseball so they know they're not alone. And my goal is to see girls' baseball programs across the country and to make Baseball for All a member of USA Baseball, as there's no girls' organization that's a member of our national governing body. And for me to have a granddaughter one day and she can just sign up and play baseball, or not, but that the option is there for her to play the greatest game on earth.
Ask yourself, why do you do what you do every single day? And if you do it for the right reasons, it should be that you love, that you have love and you have passion for what you do. And the best part of that is to be able to do that, it's with a support system, having people that support you. And I think if we want to take baseball further with women on and off the field, then I think we need to have both men and women just supporting that. So increasing our support system would be the best thing we can do for our future.
And I want to leave you guys with a challenge. When I started making this film, I was blown over by how many people, you know, we said, oh, we're making this documentary about girls and women in baseball. And they said, oh, you mean softball? No, and there's nothing wrong with softball, but that's not what we're doing, right? So I challenge you to pepper your conversations with people who are not already in the girls and women in baseball community or in the know, with mentions of girls in baseball, women in baseball, the women's national team, Baseball for All, the Grit and Trailblazers and Breakthrough Series from MLB and USA Baseball, right? Just pepper your conversation with that and respond when people say, oh, do you mean softball? No, I don't. I actually mean baseball. Yes, I mean hardball. Yes, I mean baseball, right? And with that grassroots effort that we can all do one-on-one in our communities and our conversations and emails and phone calls, in next year, in 5 years, in 10 years, we're not going to have that pushback anymore. People are just going to get it that girls are in baseball.
Thank you. I'd like to add one more thought. And there's a man sitting in the third row who's been an advocate for all of us in his own way, Rupert Brooke. And you are now on the board, shortly to be on the board of Sabre. And I've worked a little bit with Rupert, and he cares about diversity and inclusion. That's his mission, and he's making things happen. He's approachable, you can talk to him, and it's people like Rupert in MLB who, and Elizabeth Benn and Kim Ng and Billy Bean who are going to do big work in this area. So thank you for that. Sorry if I embarrassed you.